Hello and welcome to Paul's Podcast Diary, Season 5, Episode 20 for Saturday the 27th of May, 2023. And coming up this week, I'll let you know what I got up to on my recent visit to Hull, which was, of course, 50% work and 50% play. KDP is throwing a number of changes our way. I've been making some updates this week, and I've been buying Kalytics reports once again in readiness for my forthcoming book launches. Before we continue with the podcast, just a reminder, there are 5 episodes remaining in this series after this one. So 5 more episodes, and then this series 5 of the podcast will conclude. Let's start with the editing update this week, and it's just a little bit of tumbleweed, I'm afraid, because I haven't done any editing at all this week. I decided to shuffle my diary and took some time off, so I haven't done anything this week. I've just been playing and having fun. How dare I? But I will start again next Wednesday. Really, I was going to start, and then I thought, actually, I need my wife to finish book 3 before I get going. Otherwise, there's not a lot of point. So I'm hoping that my wife will... I know she was reading a book last night that she was finding a bit too literary fiction for her tastes. So I'm hoping that now she's not going to finish that book, I can encourage her to set about reading through my book. But I really needed to get through that one, book 3, so that I can then come up behind her and make the changes that she's suggesting and give it a final edit before I send it to Claire Cronshaw on the 11th of June. But I've been doing some jiggery pokery with my planning, and I've just got time to run through it again after my wife's edits before I send it to Claire, which is something I'm very keen to do. So, as I say, it's been a beautiful study week in the UK this week, and I have been enjoying that and having fun and doing things that are entirely for my own pleasure. And so I've enjoyed that a lot, but I will get back to it next week. Of course, I have been shuffling things along in my author career, my author business, and that's what I'm going to update with you right now. So with marketing, there's all sorts of bits and pieces actually this week. It's funny how it ebbs and flows from week to week. The last diary I did for you, I said, oh, there's loads of URL links to share with you. This week, I just say it's lots of bits and pieces, really, and a lot of them would come from Amazon. So I got an email from Amazon this week saying that my title or titles are in consideration for a Kindle deal. If selected, it would be featured in the amazon.co.uk Kindle store, and it'll run at some point during July. Now, I was thinking about this, you know, I get quite a lot of these, but they don't turn into deals. And I just wondered if that's an email, a standard email that you get when you renew your submissions for Kindle deals. So if you go into the marketing interface in your KDP Select dashboard, you get to nominate some titles. And it just occurred to me, I mean, in this moment, I wonder if everybody just gets those and it says, okay, that's an acknowledgement to say they're in consideration, but they might not get chosen. Because I'm sure I haven't had one chosen for a while. So if you get one of those every time you submit, just let me know, because it would be interesting to know. I've always assumed that it had moved up a notch, basically, in the considerations pile, and that it had actually made it to a pile where somebody was looking at it rather than just sitting there as a nominated book with nobody doing anything with it. But anyhow, that's an email received from Amazon this week. It may or may not result in anything. As far as BookBub's concerned, I have, since I last spoke to you, had my 12-pack rejected again and my Left 4 Dead standalone rejected again. So I need to submit another, but because I've been skiving, I haven't done that yet. I actually thought I'd forgotten that I'd had a rejection on Left 4 Dead. So compiling the notes for this podcast episode made me realise that Left 4 Dead had been rejected and I need to be submitting another one. So I do need to get on with that. I'll probably do it as soon as I finish recording this podcast. And I'm going to repeat my feeling with BookBub, that they should save everybody's time being wasted. And if there is a reason books aren't getting accepted, they should just notify you and basically give you a don't bother submitting this book again. Now, that might be for any number of reasons: dodgy book cover, just not interested, terrible blurb, whatever reasons it is they decide. But if a book has been rejected because there's a core problem with it, rather than just it was the luck of the draw and you didn't get picked, then I do think they should put everybody, including their own staff, out of their misery and stop wasting everybody's time and just say, this book ain't going to get accepted. Now, I would be happy to accept that, even if my books have been submitted too many times. So most of my books have had 2 runs, I think, at a BookBub, except the 12-pack. Most of them have had a couple of runs at it. Now, if that's just fine and they're not interested anymore, I'd rather just tell me rather than me just keep submitting these things in the hope that they're going to pick them. So I'm just going to repeat that as a stated thought on my part that BookBub should refine its process and do that, because it's wasting a lot of my time. If they're never going to take these books, just tell me, for goodness sake, put me out of my misery, and I'll save you having to sift through them every couple of weeks. We've got some other related news for writing this week, or I should say other writing related news. My mouth's not working today. It's what time is it? I'm recording this at 10 o'clock. I've had a couple of cups of tea. That's usually the only reason that my mouth won't work, because it's not been suitably oiled with tea. For some reason, my mouth is not working today, so apologies for that. Anyhow, we'll battle through. And in other writing related news, which is what I meant to say, I've discovered another tool for web analytics. I thought I'd mention this just in case you're not getting on with the Piwik tool that I mentioned to you. Clicky is the tool. It's a web analytics tool. It's free for one site with low traffic, and it has a WordPress plugin that works very simply. Now, I've never heard of Clicky before, but when you log into it, it's got quite an old-fashioned interface, actually. It looks like the sort of thing that we might have used in my internet marketing days, but it works perfectly well. I added it to one of my sites just to give it a test. As I said, it is free. It is old fashioned, but it does what it says on the box, which is it just gives you basic analytics for your website. So if you are shying away from Google, is it GA4 they call it, this new Google Analytics? I don't think I'm going to touch it, or I'm certainly not going to touch it until enough people have had enough experience to just give me a, you do this, this, and this, set up that, and it all works automatically. No, until other people have got experience of it. But I'm not going to sit there struggling with it and learning with it. I've just put analytics on my, simple analytics with Piwik on the account, and I'm quite happy with the data I'm getting from those. But clicky.com is a free alternative if you've just got one site. It doesn't have to be on WordPress, but there is a WordPress plugin if you have. And to be honest with you, this is going to be fine for most of us, because our websites, we need to have websites, but they're not a huge part of our business. But it is quite interesting just to keep an eye on those headline analytics. I've been buying Kalytics reports again this week, and the report was Female Detectives and Sleuths. This is absolutely the category that my new series of books, my new trilogy, fits into. It is a female detective. She's a detective chief inspector. That's a rank within the UK police. So that's absolutely what my book is. Now, I bought the psychological thrillers one. That was the last one that I bought. But I always find for $37, I find those reports really interesting. They give me lots of ideas. And because I'm going to have to think about setting these books up in Amazon for pre-sale shortly, it will give me ideas of keywords to use. It'll make sure that I'm listing it in the correct categories, profitable categories, where I can have some success. So to me, it's always worth buying those Kalytics reports. Now, what wouldn't I do with Kalytics? I've never seen, personally for me, the value of the kind of VIP membership where you get all of the reports. I can imagine that you would need to be, say, a publisher, or you would need to be publishing other people's books to get value from that. But for $37 a time, what's that in pounds? It's probably about £25-28, something like that. Then to me, when you get a report that is exactly your genre, then that's great data and intelligence that you couldn't compile yourself. And so they're well worth buying. And I look at the videos that Alex produces and go through the data and extract any learnings or changes that I can from those reports. This is the week that Ingram Spark is no longer charging book setup fees. That's great. I mean, that was a bit old hat, wasn't it? It put me off using Ingram Spark in the early days until the Alliance of Independent Authors, until I discovered that they had those discount codes for members. It put me off Ingram Spark because it's just too much to spend. It's too much to spend on those setup fees, particularly when you don't have to spend it on Amazon. Why, unless you were a formal publisher, would you have ever spent that money? And was it 25 quid for a revision? So a simple revision? No way was I going to do that. So for years, I have only use discount codes to list on Ingram Spark. I don't think I've ever paid a fee on Ingram Spark. That's why I've had so much immediate value from being a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors. Now, with the free revisions on the new books, there is a 60-day limit to that, so there still might be a sting in the tail if you updated a book in the future. But I'm just waiting to see is what the Alliance of Independent Authors does with its, if it's going to bother giving us the discount codes anymore, and potentially the discount codes might give us endless revisions or something like that. So I'm just waiting to see what happens with the Alliance of Independent Authors revisions. Now, that won't change my membership of the Alliance of Independent Authors. I used to sell it or encourage you to join it just to say, look, even if you're not really interested in Ally, you'll make your money back on those revisions if you've got a couple of books, as I have done for years. It's saved me a fortune. But obviously, I want to be a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors anyway, regardless of the revisions. It just occurred to me that actually I make more than my money back simply using that single discount code. And that's quite a big selling point for you know, using the Alliance of Independent Authors. I'm very happy to have my books listed on Ingram Spark. I like Ingram Spark, and you know, they do a good job. They sell my books. I don't really even know where my books are being sold, but I make money now from Ingram Spark every month, which is very nice. It's an extra source of income, all these little trickles of income. Clearly Amazon is my biggest source of income, but I have payments from Published Drive, I have payments from Draft the Digital, I have payments from Kobo, I have payments from Google, I have payments from, what are they called? Smart, no, what are they called? I forgot what they're called. Smashwords. When you get all these little payments, in addition to the bigger payments that you get from Amazon, it all adds to the money pot. So I would encourage you to list your paperbacks on Ingram Spark if you've got them. I'm not really sure where those sales are made from, but I'm very happy to be making sales. If you remember, my Morecambe Bay trilogy was inspired by, but is not based upon, a TV series in the UK called The Bay. And that series is set in Morecambe. And it was watching the first series of The Bay that made me think about all the experiences I'd had in that area. It reminded me of a holiday camp, which, interesting, they haven't even mentioned in The Bay, but I'd almost wish they would, because it's such a gift for a historical thriller, you know, a murder based in the past. It's a rich scene, dramatically. They haven't used that old holiday camp, but you know, just seeing all those locations just inspired me to write those books. Well, the good news for me is that the Bay TV series in the UK is coming back for series 5 in 2024. That's fabulous for me. The longer they keep that series going, the more I can keep selling my books on the back of it. It just keeps Morecambe in the public consciousness. It obviously allows me, albeit in a limited way through Twitter, to target a Bay audience. But it also means I can sell my books by saying, if you love the Bay, you'll enjoy reading this series. So it's one of those gifts that keep on giving. It's very lucky for me, but series 5 is coming in 2024, and that means the buzz continues around psychological thrillers in Morecambe. That can only be beneficial for me as an author. This week I've been reading Stephen Keogh's book. It's a physical paperback book. It's to my side right here. That's it, that you can hear on the microphone. It's called Murder Investigation Team. Now, Stephen did a Society of Authors, I think that's correct, one of the Society of Authors presentations I recommended to you a couple of weeks ago. It was an excellent presentation, and on the back of that, I thought, well, I'll buy the book. In actual fact, I found it at my local library, so I'm reading the library copy at the moment. I'm halfway through it. And I wanted to read the book before I do the final edits on my current trilogy, because it's not a police procedural, but it does have more of the police in it, and I just wanted to read through Stephen's book to just make sure if there were any factual errors or procedural errors in there that I could tweak in my books just to make them more realistic. I wanted to do that. Now, because I've worked in journalism and I'm reasonably aware of what goes on in the police, and we used to deal with the police all the time, I have been forever interviewing chief constables about all various issues involved with the police during my career, I've got a reasonable idea. Wouldn't say I'm an expert by any means, but I've got a reasonable idea how many of these things work. What I would say in this book, it's a great book, by the way, if you are interested in UK procedure, I'm actually probably going to just buy the paperback because I want to go through this book and I want to underline it. There's so much information in it, and it's certainly the most accessible book I've read about UK procedure. And it's very accessible. It's not dense in any way. It's got lots of kind of fabulous facts in and things like that. So it's for those of us with low attention spans, it's set out very easy, in an easy to read manner. It's got real life case files. It uses bullet points and things like that. All the sorts of things I like that help me get through a book much more easily. So I am going to recommend that to you if you are interested in procedure. But yeah, I'm going to finish reading this from my library copy, and then I'm probably going to get my own paperback and then read it again and underline all the bits I need to remember. It's not a criticism. The one comment I would make is that he says, TV dramas and books are not realistic because of this, that, and the other. And what I would say about that is kind of get over it. You know, we're writing fiction here. We're not, unless we're saying that we're writing it real life, you know, as I've said to you before, there just wouldn't be any drama there if we wrote it exactly how it happened. So you have to have that kind of leap of that suspension of disbelief to a certain extent with drama. You have to bend the rules a little bit, otherwise things don't quite work. So what I would say to you is you're writing this book for authors. I'd encourage you to just get over that if I were you, because we kind of know that we're writing fiction. We know it's all a bit in a police station. It's drudgery. It's meticulous work. It's phone bashing. We know that's not very interesting. But our job as writers is to extract interest from that and create drama that is very much rooted in real life. But as an author, you know that these things don't happen. You have to bend the truth a little bit to create an interesting story, and there's tremendous interest among readers. That would be my only comment. Everything else is brilliant. My comment is get over it. It's fiction that we're writing, not fact. And to sort of keep carping on about the fact that you tend not to watch dramas because they're not realistic. Well, that's fine, but there's a very healthy work for you informing authors about your procedure and what you do. And if you need to accept that we're writing fiction here, really, and move on from that, and then share this brilliant wealth of knowledge. And as I say, to me, it is the most accessible book that I've read. Very easy to read. It's the best thing I've read. I've read a few of these books and haven't really enjoyed them. This one I really have enjoyed and found it very, very useful. So I would recommend that to you. I also have received, I'll just lean over and get it for you and give you the sound effect. I have received my copy of Writing Crime. And if you remember, this is the little insert that I ordered through the post from Writing Magazine. And Writing Magazine, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, is a UK writing magazine, but they did have international postage for this. This is a fantastic, it's only a small, how many pages has it got? 30 pages? It's just a 30-page lightweight pull-out. It's not on glossy paper or anything like that, but it's fantastic. I've been reading it through the week over cups of tea. If I just tell you what's in it, how to plot the perfect crime, eco-crime, follow the science, crime writers talk about writing, crime scene information from a serving crime scene investigator, playing the murder game, this is about cozy crime, behind the thin blue line, police practice procedure and personality, 8 things we learned from make crime pay, maximum sentences, so this is all about what it's like pacing a story if you're writing in that genre. Life behind bars, that's a brilliant article, that about what it's like to be in prison in the UK. Web of crime, this is all about cyber crime. It's an excellent little insert. I'm so pleased I got it. It only cost me the postage. It was a negligible cost. So if you are writing in that genre, again, I do recommend that you just get your hands on that, because it's well worth, I'm very happy that I've got it. I'm really enjoying it. I have booked a training session this week. I said it's all lots of little bits and pieces this week, and it really is. Joanna Penner's got an AI session. She's doing about four of them, I think, and I've booked in for one of those sessions. I've been using AI again this week. I was just generating some titles for what will potentially be the fourth in my Hull series. So I'm already thinking towards the next book and putting together some ideas. And I was using ChatGPT. Now, I was using ChatGPT via the Bing browser. That's how I'm tending to use it at the moment, via the Bing browser. And it's great. You know, I'm getting on very well with it. I'm also seeing some fantastic AI artwork on Twitter. And what a lot of people are doing now on Twitter when they're sharing AI artwork is in the alt tags, and the alt tags are usually, you use alt tags for people who are blind or visually impaired to describe what is in a picture so that reading software can interpret it correctly and explain it correctly. What a lot of people are doing now is they're putting the full what do they call them, prompts. They're using the AI prompts and putting it into the alt tags. And what I'm now doing a lot is bookmarking artwork that I really like that I'm seeing on Twitter, but only those that have the alt tags so that I can see what the prompts are. I'm very much in the market at the moment for people who've spent time on this to save me time by telling me what prompts they're using to get great results. And this is one of the things that Joanna is doing in her AI session, but of course hers are geared towards authors. Now, the reason that I signed up for Joanna's course, and it's £75, I think it is. Yeah, £75 to join these courses. They're 2-hour live talk courses. Is I particularly want to go to the source of the water, if you want. And I want to hear what Joanna says about ethics, because I'm very concerned to get my ethical response right, particularly with artwork. I'm looking at artwork and learning how to generate quality artwork, but I want to make sure that I get the ethics of that right, i.e. we're not ripping artists off and using artwork that has already been produced. I want it to be AI produced. It can be inspired, as I told you the other week, from real life, but it must not be ripping anything off. So I want to make sure I've got my ethics right with this as I go forward with it. But also, I want to hear what prompts Joanna is using in her business to get the kind of results that we're looking for. And Joanna spent a lot of time figuring this out. I don't want to spend that time figuring it out because, as you know, I'm busy getting some books ready for publication at the moment. So I've just signed up for the course. I've just gone to the source of the well, basically. But I am, as I've told you, very interested in AI. Not quite sure where I am with AI yet, but I'm not going to let it pass me by. I want to be all over it in terms of learning and understanding it. So I'll let you know how that goes. Obviously, I won't give away all Joanna's information, but I'll give you an overview of that when I've done that. I can't remember when it is, June or July sometime. It's in the diary, but that's coming up shortly. Hopefully, actually, now I mention it, hopefully that will come before this season ends. I'm just trying to remember. It's on a Monday, and I'm just trying to remember what the date is now, because I might not get that in before the podcast ends. We'll have to wait and see. But hopefully I will. Carrying on then, the Ingram ID advertising platform, which I've spoken to you about since the inception of the thing, the Ingram ID advertising platform allows you to use Ingram audiences on Google, which is the outlet I'm particularly interested in, Facebook and Amazon. I wanted to get to use it straight away. It's only being trialed in the US at the moment. I got a message from them a couple of weeks ago saying, oh, we're doing it in the UK now, but it turned out that was just for VAT registered businesses. I attended a webinar about it because I was particularly keen to find out where they get the audiences from, how they're validated, how they set them up. And I've seen that now, and I'm very happy with how that's done. They're great audiences that I want to try and target if I can. But at the end of that, in the Q&A section, somebody had said, when's it coming into the UK? And the answer was, oh, in the UK, you need to have a credit card. Well, I've got a credit card. I'm not a VAT reg business, but I do have a credit card. So I got back to my contact at Ingram ID and said, can I use this yet, please? I'm very keen to use this. So I've got my eye on Ingram ID. I'm going to be all over it the minute I can use it. It might not work, but I want to try it. But what it does give me, what I'm particularly interested in, is the Google audiences. This is what I want to try and target. And I want to target £9.99 ebooks on that to see how they go and maybe try some paperbacks as well. So with Google particularly, you're going to need some margin in Google. There's no way can I sell 99 pence books on Google. That's not going to work. I need to be selling something with some margin and some maneuverability, because it will cost me. And my immediate inclination is, can I sell 9.99 ebooks on Google and make a profit from them? So that's what I'm going to be looking at when I get my hands on that platform. I've got another email from KDP this week. You may have got one of these. They're talking about, it took me a while to figure it out actually, but I think I'm on top of it. Tell me if you think I've got it wrong. But they're basically saying that they're using these things called transparency codes in the ISBN barcode boxes. And they're saying about, depending on how you add your ISBN codes, starting from April the 6th, they were adding these transparency codes on print-ready cover files. Now, I've had a look at some of my books, and as far as I can see, and I might be wrong with this, as far as I can see, there's no change required on my part. They're just informing me that these funny little codes that they put on are going to be on the backs of some of my books. Now, when I went to look at some of my books, my older books, I just did a random variety. I couldn't see any visualizations of these codes, these transparency codes. And I'm just assuming, looking at the information they've given me, I'm just assuming they fit it in on the existing space and there's nothing required on my part. That's my understanding of it. I don't need to do anything, as far as I can see. It's just a sort of little internal tweak that doesn't really change anything. But if I've got that wrong, please drop me an email and let me know. Also with KDP, we've got the price rises for paperbacks and hard covers. Now, I've got a lot of hard covers, so I'm very pleased to have used the one-time bulk list price update. Now, I did this the other day. I updated all my paperback prices, and paperbacks are getting quite expensive now. This is why I'm quite surprised I still sell some on Ingram Spark. I've had to adjust my prices already on Ingram Spark, and I tell you, I wouldn't be buying paperbacks at that price. It would have to be a very special book for me to be doing that. I'd be looking at paperback secondhand or from the library. I just wouldn't be buying paperbacks now. They're very expensive, unless I was buying something very special by a particular author. Can't think of anybody at the moment who I'd buy in paperback at current prices. So I just read the ebook, it's a lot cheaper, or use the library. But yeah, I used the bulk updater this week. Now, what I don't know, basically it said use the bulk updater and you'll make the same kind of profit, the same margin as you were before. So I used the bulk updater. I thought, right, okay, there's no way am I going through all these books individually. So what I have done, I've done the lazy man's option, as I always do, which is update the lot. So I'm not going to be making a loss from anything. And then in my own time, when I feel like it, I will sit down and then check the prices. I think the thing I want to be sure of is that the prices are attractive prices to buyers. So for instance, if I've got a paperback priced at 6.99, what I will need to be sure of is that it hasn't priced it at, say, £7.52, some odd price that doesn't really work well with buyers. I'd want it to go to from 6.99 to 7.99, to a nice price that attracts buyers. So I haven't looked at that yet. I've just pressed the button, made sure that I'm not running at a loss in any of the books and that I'm preserving my profit margins, which frankly are usually only about $1 or £1 on a paperback. They're not much more than that. And I'll come back to it probably after the date when the price changes have been applied on the, is it the 20th of June? I'll come back to it sometime after that and then look at what it's actually done for my selling prices. But just as a brute force response to it, I've clicked the button, updated all the prices, and we'll come back to it later and have a look and just make sure it hasn't sort of, made my prices really weird in a way that buyers will look at them and think that's not a normal price. Basically, you want them to end at 49 or preferable 99. Something 99 is what you want them to end at because that's more attractive to buyers. I've had an email from Publish Drive this week. They were essentially notifying me of their improved interface. I went to have a look and it really has improved a lot. It's way better. So if you're a published drive user, do have a login and have a look. Now, I don't sell an awful lot on published drive. I get trickles of money from published drive. Again, well, I was going to say, again, I'm not really sure I'm selling the books, but actually now I can be sure where I'm selling the books because the improved interface is really good. It's a very user-friendly, it's very easy to get to the data. It's exactly what I've been nagging Google to do. When Google keep asking me for feedback, I keep saying, you need to improve this. I need to be able to find, at the moment, if I want to interrogate my Google data directly through Google, I have to download spreadsheets. Now look, I'm not downloading spreadsheets. I'm not messing about with spreadsheets. This is the 21st century. I shouldn't have to wade through a spreadsheet to figure out what the heck's going on in my business. I should have a visual interface of that data. And that's exactly what Published Drive have now done. Now, again, on Published Drive, I don't sell through, well, I actually do sell through a lot of different outlets. Those are all the outlets that I cannot access through Draft the Digital. Well, Draft the Digital, basically, or Smashwords. So I use Published Drive to fill in all the gaps. It also allows me to target a Chinese market. I make a trickle of money from Published Drive. Don't make an awful lot of money from Published Drive, but I do make money from Published Drive. So it's worth being on Published Drive. Every time I get a payment or a check from a different outlet, I think, well, you know, it's worth being on there. I don't have to do anything. I just have to list the books once. I've only got 5 books listed on Published Drive at the moment because I'm not listed why. I think I've just got my, if I remember correctly, I don't think I've even got my sci-fi on there, actually. I don't know why. I looked the other day and I've got 5 books on there. So presumably that means I've just got my non-fictions on there. So maybe I ought to have a look at that, actually, and make sure that my sci-fi is listed on it as well. But do take a look at Published Drive if you haven't had a look at it recently. Let's move on to links to share then. All these links you will find on this week's page, resources page at selfpublishingjourneys.com, and this is episode 20, so it's clearly marked there. Couple of things to share with you. When Claire Cronshaw sent me my edit bag, and did I mention that? Can't remember whether I mentioned that Claire had sent the edit for book 2 back. Did I mention that in the last diary? Well, she has, and I've gone through it and created the file for beta readers in Bookfunnel. So that it's all moved into Vellum now and processed. One of the things Claire sent me was an interesting article from a website called touchstoneediting.com. And this was just a mini lesson, and if you want to find out more about this, it was just an article from that website, and it was on punctuating interrupted dialogue. So it's quite a minutiae of writing. But when I went to look at that article, I thought, oh, this website's actually quite interesting. I like this website, very useful to have on the, you know, on the radar. So I will share the article that Claire shared with me. But the main learning point, or the main thing that I wanted to share with you, is that this touchstone-editing.com website is well worth a look if you want to dive into editing or self-editing a little bit more. Now, this is probably UK only. I'm not sure whether you can get the BBC iPlayer, whether you can access it in any way elsewhere in the world, but there is a real-life forensics techniques program or series on the BBC, and it's called Forensics, the Real CSI. The 3 series, I think we're into series 3 now, so I don't know whether the whole of series 3 is there yet or whether it will emerge over the next couple of weeks. But it's all about real life forensic techniques. So I've marked that as something that I want to watch. It's something I'll probably watch in the day when my wife's out, because it's specialist stuff and it is work viewing rather than pleasurable viewing. But that's probably something I'll watch during the day over a cup of tea. But if you can access that series, you're writing in that genre, it's very much what I'm writing at the moment, then obviously I'm going to watch that, and you may want to watch that as well. One of these articles that just came up in my feed, it's from entrepreneur.com. The article is 21 Lessons I Swear By After 21 Years as an Entrepreneur. This won't apply to all authors, not all 21 points, but when I read it through, I thought actually about 15 or more of those do apply to authors. So I'll share that just as an interesting business article that I got some value from. I've also got a page from Ingram Spark, who sent an update email to me this week. It was probably actually off the top of that email telling me about the pricing changes. It's again something that I hadn't spotted before, but Ingram Spark have a resources and tools page where they pull in lots of resources in one place. And I thought I'd share that with you. I had a look at it and found some useful stuff on there. It'll be particularly useful for you if you're more at the beginning of your writing career than if you've been in it for a few years. But I'll just share that one link with you on the show notes this week. I found it really, really useful. I've already told you that Publish Drive sent out a newsletter this week. I've mentioned before that it's well worth subscribing to the Publish Drive newsletter, even if you don't use Publish Drive. Primarily, they were telling us about the interface update, which I just mentioned to you. But there are two articles I'd like to share with you this week. One is how to create an indie book marketing plan, a timeline for that. And the other article from Publish Drive is about how to price your audiobooks. Both of those are very pertinent articles, so I'll share them on this week's show notes. And then finally, an email from BookBub, who I've had a little moan about their selection criteria. They've shared this week a video, How BookBub Editors Choose Categories. It's a little video blog article, but I thought that would be useful to have a look at, looking at the categories that they're using to select books. So you'll find all of those web links on the show notes for this week's episode, which is season 5, episode 20. Just head for selfpublishingjourneys.com and you'll see all those details. On to the personal news for this week then. And of course, I was away last week. We were in Hull and in Rotterdam. It was a brilliant break. I didn't need it as a break or a holiday, but it was a brilliant visit. I really enjoyed it. And actually, we've flown a lot of times since COVID started. We've flown an embarrassing number of times, actually. And I'm still finding it quite stressful flying, because you're contained with people in a plane. You're in queues and things like that, and in confined spaces if you get on a transfer bus and things like that. So there has been a little bit of stress involved in all these flights. And of course, this time we did it on the ferry. We drove down to Hull and we did the journey on the ferry. It's a lot more relaxing on the ferry. There's a lot more kind of space around people and things like that. I really did enjoy it on the ferry. So the journey was split into two parts. We were visiting Hull, and the Hull visits were primarily to visit the locations that I've used in the trilogy that I'm shortly about to release, to check the locations to make sure that I got everything right, because I'd done it all on Google Maps and from memory, and to take photographs of those locations, because one of the things I found that's been useful to build my list is I do location scrapbooks. So I do little scrapbooks for each book of the locations that I've used, and people can get hold of that in return for subscribing to my mailing list. That's why I've been gathering all that information, to just be ahead of all of this. So when we were in Hull, we visited the marina, the Hull barrage area, the River Hull outlet, where a lot of my book is set, the old wooden pier, which is currently closed at the moment, but I have been on it in the past. We went to see the Deep, which is a big sort of visitor attraction in Hull. We went to Hull's old town. I've been to the Humber Bridge. We found where Humberside Police HQ was, because I just need to know that. I don't know whether that was there, actually. I'm just trying to think where Humberside Police HQ was when I worked there. I was there 20 odd years ago. I don't think it was where it is now, but I might be wrong about that. We went to Ferriby Foreshore, North Ferriby Foreshore, and many, many more places. I got loads of photographs on my kind of Google Photos drive at the moment. I just took snap, 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 snap. And also, as we were going along, I did actually think to myself, actually, I'm missing a trick here. I need to get some videos as well. So I've also taken videos. I'm delighted to say that my camera seems to have a Steadicam function, because my hand certainly isn't Steadicam. I haven't got a steady hand, but the phone was brilliant. I mean, you know, having worked, sort of half worked in this environment, in that I was involved at the BBC in the very early days of us using mobile devices to get film and photos and things like that. Wow, the quality of the video you can take on a camera now, and with a Steadicam, I could do a nice sweep of the Humber and it's perfectly still using the camera. It's absolutely amazing what you could do with our handheld cameras these days. All the equipment that you used to need to use at the BBC, you just don't really need it anymore. You can do it on cameras. So it is incredible. But I also took some video shots too, because particularly on the Facebook ads that I target to people living in Hull, I want to use, to catch their attention, I want to use video of local places that they will recognize. I'll find some music that I can use, that I can buy the licensing for, to use in a Facebook ad, some nice portentous music, you know, thriller-like music. And I want to do some Facebook ads to try and sell the books to a local audience in Hull. I'll also obviously be selling them to an international audience, but where you've got books that are based in a locality, to me it makes sense to hyper target your local adverts to a local audience too, to try and get that word of mouth buzz going. So that the Hull elements of that were brilliant, productive. I got loads of stuff. I've got ideas for future books. It was really productive from an author point of view. I thoroughly enjoyed it. When we lived in Hull in the 90s, I'm just trying to think what year we were in Hull. All these years tend to blend after a while. I think it was about 1996, something like that. Mid 90s we were in Hull. If I looked at my CV, I'd be able to work it out, because it's all, I can tell it from the jobs I did. But from memory, it was mid 90s, I think. And I moved from Hull 1999, 2000, something like that. It's changed tremendously. And because we were younger then, I would be in my 30s then, I was saying to my wife, there's loads of stuff here that's really interesting that I just don't feel that were on my radar when we lived there the first time around. So maybe because I'm older now, maybe you just pay attention to different things. But it's such an interesting area. There's so much history there that I wasn't aware of. When you think I was working on a local radio station, I was talking about all this stuff, so much stuff that I wasn't aware of when I lived there. So I found it really interesting. It was great to be back. We did some runs while we were there. So I got several runs in last week. My wife and I, we were going to run along the marina, but my wife said, why don't we turn left and go through what's called Victoria Dock Village, I think it's called. It's a new estate built around an old Victoria Dock area. So it integrates new and old. And so we ran up in the direction of the ferries, and that was a lovely run, just all along the sides of the River Humber. And there were all sorts of lovely things that we saw along the run while we were there. So I stopped off to take lots of photographs. It's terrible, isn't it, when you go for a jog with your wife and you say, now that's a great place to find a dead body. your life's taken a sinister turn, hasn't it, when you're spotting places that dead bodies might get washed up along the Humber. But there were some great places, and I've got photographs of them. But that estate was being built when we lived there, and it's a fantastic estate. It looks wonderful there now. I was saying to my wife, I wouldn't mind one of these houses on the front that overlook the Humber. There's some fantastic properties there. So we were looking at Hull, and you could walk to the ferries from Victoria Dock. It was a really lovely run. I also, after we got back from Rotterdam, I ran the Humber Bridge Park as well. So I did about 7 kilometres there. I was running all by what's called Hesel Foreshore and taking all sorts of views from the bridge. That was particularly important to me because that's where the first death occurs. And I was able to check the drop. If you ever read that book, you'll find out why I needed to check the drop of the bridge. But there were all sorts of little details and photos that I needed to take then. I've abseiled from there in the past, but that, of course, again, was 20-something years ago. So I really just wanted to check some details there as well. But that was tremendously productive. So, yeah, I got two runs, but even the runs were working runs because we were taking photographs while we were there. We also got a park run in at Den Haag in Rotterdam. And I don't know how you pronounce it, but it reads like Zuider Park. Zuider Park? Zuider Park. So we did a park run in Den Haag, which is just a little bit outside of Rotterdam. We did that last Saturday as well. That was beautiful. Two laps. There were more British people there than there were locals, would you believe? The reason for that is because it's a Z. It begins with a Z, and people who are trying to do a park run alphabet go there for the Z. It's either that or Poland to get your Z. So we didn't go for the Z. We went because we wanted to visit the area. But getting our park run Z was just a byproduct of what we were doing while we were there. Now, it was also great while we were in Hull. I met up with Claire Jennison at the Ferrans Art Gallery in Hull. Now, the Ferrans Art Gallery is where we used to take the kids when they were tiny. I think I had two kids in Hull. We had a toddler and a newborn while we were in Hull, and our third child was born here in Carlisle. So the Ferrans Art Gallery used to be a great place to go to take kids. So, you know, if they were making a noise, it didn't matter too much. They've got a lovely little cafe through there. So it was nice to see Claire. and meet Claire in person at the Fred's Art Gallery. Thanks for buying afternoon tea, Claire. That was very much appreciated. And as you would guess, we had a nice author chat. Claire's working with, what are they called? I forgot what they're called. Whoever she's just published through. I was going to say Bookature, but it's not Bookature. It's the other one. Oh, my memory is so annoying. It won't come to me. But you know who I mean. The crime publishers. Claire's just done really well with her launch. Very, very interesting. Got some great reviews. She got over 100 reviews in the first week or so of being published. Amazing. So it's been very interesting to watch that. I'm trying to say, oh, Bloodhound. I've got it written here. I've written it. Claire's published with Bloodhound Books. But it's been remarkable to see how that's worked and how many reviews she's got. And very strong reviews. So congratulations on that, Claire. Lovely to meet you. And I'm not going to share the details of our conversation, but we were having author chats, of course, and exchanging notes as you do. So that was great to meet Claire as well. My wife went and had a look at the Egyptian displays while we were yakking because we were quite late. So she enjoyed that. What else did we do while we were there? Just tons of book-related stuff. And I'm not going to even mention what we did while we were in the Netherlands, while we were in Rotterdam and Den Haag, because that's kind of holiday stuff. I'm just mentioning the writing-related stuff. But it was great. It was great. I really enjoyed it. And it made a huge difference from being on the planes. And just every day I just said to my wife, I'm really enjoying this. Oh, we even managed to squeeze in a visit to my mum, because my mum, it's about an hour's drive from Hull. And when I was looking at the things we were doing, I said to my wife, do you know what, we could nip over and see my mum on Sunday. So we nipped over to see my mum and my sister and my brother-in-law, and we had a nice Indian meal out. We were only there for about 4 hours, but even managing to squeeze that in was great. So yeah, it was just one of those trips that was just really great and really enjoyed it. I have to say, I have a feeling we might be back in Hull again, researching locations. There's so much that we could do there, so much to research there. I do feel there might be another visit in there at some point. Unlikely to be this year, might be this year, but unlikely to be this year. But yeah, I feel like we could go back and we could do a bit more research there. So that's personal updates. Oh, I should just mention, this is just something that I've mentioned to you in the past. One of the things I'm doing at the moment is I'm retraining, I'm relearning all the DJ skills that I used to have in the 1980s. What we used to use in radio is obviously very different from DJing. And I've got myself a DJ deck, a modern DJ deck. Well, I've just been plugging it through a bit of software on my computer, and I've been running it through my little poxy speakers that I have connected with the computer, because they don't need to particularly sound very good. But I got myself what are called, I went to see a friend this week. I think I've mentioned this friend to you before. He performs, he's a multi-musicianist. He creates backing tracks for himself in his study, and then he plays live along to them and adds live vocals to them. And I've been saying to him for ages, we run together, and I've been saying to him for ages, I'd love to go and see your setup and what you've been doing. And I went to see his kind of man cave. It's not a man cave because he shares it with his wife, but his work area. And he had some beautiful speakers on the wall. And these are called monitor speakers. So when he's doing his music work and he's mixing, he can listen to it at a decent volume, a decent enough volume, so you can hear all the details and all the little flaws in it. And I was looking at these speakers thinking, oh, do you know what, that's what I need for my disco deck. So I've ordered myself some what are called monitor speakers. And these monitor speakers, you could actually, they're loud enough to do an office disco. They're loud and really good quality. And the moment I plugged them into the decks, I thought, oh, this is what I need. You need to kind of feel the vibe, really. You need to, it's not the same on little computer speakers. So I'm going to be annoying my family, I'm afraid. It's a good job we're in a detached house and there are no sort of immediate neighbours to disturb. I don't think the family are going to be thanking me for this. But all the sound's beautiful and bassy, and it really kind of gets you into the disco vibe. Whereas it just wasn't really doing it for me on my computer speakers. The moment I put this on, and you could hear the boom, 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 as you would if you were doing a live disco performance, it's really good. So anyhow, I bought those this week. That's a little bit of personal news. And what I'm going to try and do is coincide my DJ learning and practice time with when everybody's out the house, because I'm not going to be very popular very quickly if I start doing that and have it turned up. But we'll see how we get on with that. But that's a little bit of fun this week. And if you want to see my little rig, I mean, it's all very small now. In the old days, we used to have to put it in vans and lug it. It's all very minimalist these days. But if you want to see my disco rig, have a look on my Twitter feed, because I put a photograph of it there this week. Let's finish then, as we always do, with healthy author updates. If you want to tune out now, you can tune out at this point. So I got my exercises in last week, or the week that's just passed. Got all my runs in. I did a 10K on the Tuesday. I've got a nice pattern now. So what will I be doing next week? I'm running 5K at Park Run on Saturday. I'll be at the Nature Reserve running a 5K on Sunday. I have a 10K club run on Tuesday evening. I did the 10K last week. I enjoyed that. There was a nice group of us at the back, and some of the ladies were having a great old gossip. And it was brilliant. It's brilliant at the back. You get great gossip at the back. So I was at the back with the gossip group. It was great. And this week I've got a 5 kilometer race on Wednesday. This is around the castle in Carlisle. I'll have another 5 kilometer club run on Thursday. So I'm doing a lot of runs this week. Incidentally, again, if you pay attention to this, I've been trying to run 100 kilometers per month. And I've just got, when I do tomorrow's run on Saturday, I will have reached 100 kilometres this month. So for 2 months of this year, I've managed to run 100 kilometres or more each month, which is my new target at the moment. So yeah, lots of runs next week, possibly a little too much, but I'm sure I'll keep that up. It's fine. I'm still doing the weights and the stretching exercises. They're still killing me, but I'm still doing them. And then on Wednesday, my wife and I have decided to have one of these full health checks. So you'll have noticed we're very much at a inverted commas stage of life, a different stage of life, and looking ahead to a change of pattern, a change of routine in life. And so what we've decided to do is get one of these full health checks that you can get done. The surgery usually call you in for them, but I think they're so inundated with COVID stuff, they haven't done them. So we've paid for some of these full health checks. One of my running pals said, oh, yeah, they do them at the race course every couple of weeks. You can just, you know, roll up and they'll take your bloods and everything like that and send you all the results. So we've done those. The reason for that is really just if there's anything wrong with, like, cholesterol, you know, you're getting too close to diabetes or anything like that, I want to be right on top of it. You know, I don't want to end up, I see so many people of my age going on blood pressure drugs and things like that. And it seems to be a slippery slope. You start one, it usually starts with blood pressure tablets, and you start one and before you know it, you've got one of these days of the week things that have all your drugs in it. Well, I really want to avoid that. And I want to avoid it by managing diet, by managing exercise and things like that. I don't want to get caught in this kind of drug scenario, unless you need it, of course, for something that's going to keep you alive. Things like blood pressure, diabetes, you could usually do something about those. So I want to be well on top of these ahead of time rather than surprised by it. So that's the purpose of doing that on Wednesday. And that is about living a long life healthily. That's why we're doing that. That is it then for my healthy author updates. If you want to see pictures or results from runs, if you're interested in that sort of stuff, just head for paulteague.net/run. That is it for this week's show. Thanks as ever for listening. I hope you have a great week of writing. From me, Paul Teague, it is bye-bye for now.